You're listening to the Screaming Pods Network.
Hi there. Welcome to this episode of Just the Discs. My name's Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. So I don't usually do a lot of episodes about new movies. You know, the primary focus of the show is often, as those that listen know, on the output of boutique labels that tend to live in the world of older genre cinema or just older cinema in general. You know, that is my kind of the place where I live, if you will, the stuff I watch the most of. But I certainly watch a lot of new movies, and I do sometimes like to talk about them, although I feel like new movies in general get a lot more attention because they're new than a lot of the older stuff, you know, even if the movies aren't that good. But what is a bummer is when a new movie comes out, and I know this happens to me, I make a sort of a first impression based on the trailer, and then I decide, okay, I need to see that in the theater, or I can wait till that comes to VOD, or maybe I don't need to see it at all. And I've worked in movie marketing for a long time, so I have a general understanding of, as I'm sure a lot of people do, like what it takes to sell a movie, you know, what things to emphasize, and, you know, what are the parts of this that we can hook people with. And so I have to be honest in that I saw the trailer for this one. I'm talking about Instant Family from last year, the Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne movie. And I made my judgment about it, that it just seemed like something that I didn't have to rush out and see. It looked like it had some fun moments, but ultimately was not necessarily going to be something that would blow me away.
I love what you two are doing with this house, but what are you going to do with 5 bedrooms? You guys are obviously never having kids.
What was that look?
I did not do a look.
You're doing a look right now.
There's no look.
Have a good fight, guys.
There's so many kids in foster care, and they're having an orientation.
Ellie, people who take in foster kids are really special. The kind of people who volunteer when it's not even a holiday. We don't even volunteer on a holiday.
Over 500,000 children are currently in foster care. The county puts these on because they can match a lot of kids and parents quickly.
Look at the big kids.
Everybody's avoiding them. I'm gonna go and say hi.
But they're teenagers, okay? They use drugs and they watch people playing video games on YouTube. We're not equipped for any of that.
Hi! Just FYI, we can all hear you. It's okay. Go mingle with the kiddies and don't give it another thought. Bye-bye.
She was cool.
Lizzie comes with 2 younger siblings.
3 kids? Too much.
Oh,
my God.
They're adorable.
Why would you show us that? That's wrong.
Here we are.
Make yourself at home, because you are at home.
Do you like the Clippers?
Oh, I'm more of a Lakers fan.
Oh, no!
You hit me because I like the Clippers.
I think the Clippers are awesome.
They were smart for trading Blake Griffin. Their best player.
Just stay there until the fire department comes, okay?
You're just another white lady who wants to adopt charity orphans to make you feel good about yourself.
Pretend, Mom!
We might have a little bit of a knack for this.
Oh. I beg to differ.
This stuff takes time. Lizzie had to parent wantedly all by herself.
This is never going to be easy.
But with some structure and love, you could make your house a home.
You.
Please just go away.
When I'm pissed, you know what I like to do?
Really?
All right, let me fix it, okay?
Thanks, Daddy.
I just got my first daddy. Oh, what the?
You suck! I want some of that. Hey, honey, can I help you with anything?
Nope.
And I was pleasantly surprised. I was sent this movie by Paramount to check out. And it has a whole lot more going for it than I ever would have expected. I mean, first of all, the first thing that caught my attention was that it's directed by a guy named Sean Anders. I have a personal, you know, connection, not to him directly, but to the fact that he is from my home state. He's from Wisconsin, and, you know, he's been making movies for a while now. I want to say his first film was circa 2005, but he's definitely found his way into the big time in terms of directing comedies, in that he has done things like the last two Daddy's Home movies, which I honestly haven't seen yet. I need to see them. I'd like to see them. He did Horrible Bosses 2, and he wrote Hot Tub Time Machine. He wrote She's Out of My League. But, you know, two movies that I think are very enjoyable comedies. He wrote We're the Millers, the Dumb and Dumber sequel. But he also did a movie called Sex Drive, which I'm a really big fan of, in 2008. That is, it's kind of like a slight update on The Sure Thing.
Again, you're 18 and you've never had a girlfriend. That's how people wind up getting gay.
I don't think that's really how it happens. And anyway, there is a girl.
Where'd you meet her?
Online.
What? Don't you watch Dateline? She's probably a guy.
Maybe. But what if she's not? She doesn't even want me, okay? She wants...
I mean, that looks like you. Like the eyes.
This is a fucking written invitation to your dick from the internet.
You roll up in a 69 GTO, she's not gonna care what you look like.
It's definitely got, you know, 80s sex comedies in mind. It's very raunchy. Clark Duke is very good in it. I remember seeing that one and catching that it was Sean Anders and going, oh, that's cool. Because, like, I knew him, and I know his sister Andrea I went to high school with. She's become a big actress. She was on the Friends spinoff Joey, and she's in this movie briefly. I think she's in all his movies. And his wife is actually a woman who was really good friends with my sister in high school. So there's all these, like, familial connections. So anyway, back to Instant Family. So for those who don't know, you could sum up the plot incredibly simply with something like, it's about a couple that decides to adopt some kids because they're having concerns about getting older and trying to have kids. And, you know, Mark Wahlberg especially is talking about, you know, being the old parents.
I didn't do a look.
You're doing a look right now.
There's no look. You're doing a look. All right, maybe I did do a look. But just hearing him say it out loud, we're never having children. I mean, is that true?
I quit bringing it up because every time I ever did, you say it's not the right time.
I know, but we were always so broke, and then we were going crazy trying to get the business started. We flipped 5 houses this year, and I'm starting to turn down design work. I always thought that I'd be a mom someday. I think I'm ready.
Great, now you're ready, and by the time the kid's 16, I'm gonna be one of those old dads like Brian Hendrickson's dad.
You're not that old.
Here's an idea. What if we adopt a 5-year-old? Be like I got cracking when I was 36. How about that?
What's neat about the movie is that it's actually based on Sean Anders and his wife's experiences with adopting their own kids. They had a similar situation where they found a kid that they liked, and there were two other kids that came with that child. And that's what happens here, you know? So they find a teenage girl, I believe she's Mexican, and she has a brother and a sister. And so they decide to go all in and take on all three. And it does sound like a very broad, feel-good, heartwarming comedy. And it is that. The neat thing about Sean Anders is he has the ability to do that. But I also think he does it in such a way as to walk a very fine line between the heartwarming and then spilling over into, you know, complete sentimentality, which it does in moments, but it's so unabashed about it and so sort of joyous about it and so real about some of the other things, the mistakes that you make as a parent. You know, there's a really great sequence early on where, and I could just relate to this a lot personally, but where they're trying to get the kids to bed, and they all have to go in the bathroom and brush their teeth and all this and take a shower and all that, and they keep spilling water outside the bathroom. So there's this fast motion montage, and Mark Wahlberg keeps like wiping the ground with a towel with his foot over and over in this little bit. And it's so funny because you think about how much time as a parent you spend wiping. You just wipe up a lot of stuff, a lot of spills, a lot of water, a lot of mess. It's just something you become accustomed to doing and you don't even think about it. But so I thought that was a nice little touch. And there's lots of little touches, you know, in terms of this relationship. The Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne characters are, you know, happily married. They are, at least one of the things they do is they buy and flip houses. They, like, you know, rebuild them and rework them and sell them off. And so they have this really great Pat lifestyle they've worked out. And yeah, they just sort of, they decide to go this way. And it starts with a conversation about, you know, not having kids. And so that sort of look that a couple gives each other when you know that one is in less agreement than the other, like, we're on the same page with this, right? That sort of look. And then the look back that's like, actually, ... You know, that sort of thing is the beginning of it. And I love that. I love those moments in relationships and marriages where you're forced to confront something about your spouse or your, you know, girlfriend or boyfriend, and it becomes a jumping off point for a bigger discussion or maybe a big life change. And that really happens. But anyway, so we're watching Instant Family, my wife and I, with my son, and we really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very good film, and I was surprised how much I liked it and how moved I was by it. You know, it's one of those things where, like I said, you worry about something being overly sentimental. And I don't know. I'm trying to think if it's a movie. I think I can recommend it to anybody, and you would find something to appreciate about it. The humor, the couple interaction stuff. You know, Wahlberg is, I think, a very great comic actor, as is Rose Byrne. Like, she's just got this ability to be sort of low-key and very funny and just one of the most delightful actors in the world, really, right now. And I think she's fantastic. So the two of them together are great. But the kids, when they enter the picture, especially the oldest daughter, the oldest girl, played by Isabella Moner, who was in Sicario 2. I think she's the drug kingpin daughter or something like that. I recognized her, but she's very good. If I had any criticisms of the movie at all, I would say they lie in that the younger brother and the youngest sister characters don't have a ton of character traits. Outside of the brother is not that sharp, and the daughter is prone to throwing fits, I guess, and some other things. I mean, I felt like those two characters maybe could have had a little bit more, but the relationship between the oldest daughter character and the Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne characters is really neat, and it's interesting to see how understandably guarded she is and how they move forward with that stuff. So, I don't know. I was just really kind of pleasantly surprised by this one, and I would recommend it. And if you're a parent, I don't want to say there's no way you won't enjoy it, but I just think there's things in it that you can't help but kind of go, oh, that's pretty good, you know? Like, either if it's about the naivete of early parenting where you're starting to think you've got it all under control and then realizing you don't, like that sort of stuff, or whatever. It just has a lot of stuff going on. And it's a nice Blu-ray. I mean, it's got a commentary from the director, and which I liked. I forget who's with him on that track, but there's deleted and extended scenes, gag reel. There's featurettes on the different characters. Oh, another thing that's really great about this movie is that Octavia Spencer and Tig Notaro play, like, two of the people that work at the adoption, like, agency place. They are fantastic together. They just...
In any case, I'd love to set up a visitation, unless you have any other concerns.
It's just a visitation, so...
It's just... Is it a problem, you know, the whole white savior thing? Like the Avatar thing.
Avatar.
How, you know, the blue guys couldn't fight off the unobtainium guys until the white guy showed up, pretended to be a blue guy. All I'm saying is, like, white bread couple taking in little Latin kids. Are people gonna think we shouldn't be doing that?
You know what? We'll go ahead and toss these kids back into the system, and I'll just jot you down for whites only.
Oh, come on, I didn't mean...
No, I did. That's not...
Don't write whites only. That's not what he meant.
It's not at all what I meant.
Pete, I appreciate your cultural sensitivity, but we have every color of kid in the mm-hmm. system. And we have every color of parent.
Every color.
Just not nearly enough.
Not nearly enough parents.
Mm-mm.
And listen, you're going to get some funny looks. And people are going to say some stupid shit. But if you're willing to love these kids who need a mom and dad, and somebody has a problem with that, well, you just ask them how many goddamn kids they've adopted.
Exactly.
Hell.
Shoot.
All right, well, I just wanted to have the Avatar talk. Now we did, so I'm good.
Oh, fantastic.
You ready to meet three kids?
Three kids?
Yeah.
All right.
We'll set it up.
I don't know. They play off each other really well. You know, Octavia can be a little bit big when she wants to be, but it's always really, I don't know, she just is so real. And Tig is very understated and can be kind of sarcastic and funny. I mean, so I thought that was a really nice casting choice to have them in the mix. And then the parents are played by, and I love this, Julie Haggerty from Airplane. I think she's Rose Byrne's mom. I can't remember whose mom she is, but she's great. There's one particular scene that she has to play in, like, not clown makeup, but basically the kids have, like, drawn on her face, you know, as a fun exercise, and she didn't realize they were using, like, real Sharpies and stuff. So she basically looks like a hobo clown, and she has to play a serious scene, and I just love her. I think she's great. I mean, she's in, obviously, Airplane. She's in Lost in America. She's a fantastic actor, and I love to see older actors like that back on screen doing what they do wonderfully. And then Michael O'Keefe, Danny Noonan from Caddyshack, plays Rose Byrne's dad, and he's really funny too. He doesn't have a ton of stuff to do, but that's pretty cool. And then Margot Martindale plays Mark Wahlberg's mom, and she's really, really nice in the movie as well. So it's a really nice ensemble. Joan Cusack has a small part. You know, there's a lot of good bits here. But yeah, one of the better movies of 2018, and better than the poster would and marketing would make you think. Because the poster is just like the three kids and then a plus sign and Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne. It just looks a little more generic. I don't know. We've seen adoption comedies. We've seen family trouble comedies. And yeah, I don't know. I think the grounding and personal experience, there's like a support group that the two characters go to where they talk to other, you know, adoptive parents, foster parents.
Okay. And Pete and Ellie took in three children 10 days ago, one of which is a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no, it's going pretty good. I mean, I think the kids made us realize just what kind of a rut we were in before.
Well, not really a rut, just like the same old routine, you know, like work, going to the gym, grabbing dinner, drinks, the movies. You know what I mean?
No, we don't know.
Well, I think she's just trying to say that we needed a new challenge, you know, maybe something to break up the monotony.
That's not the only thing they're going to break.
No, I know. I know everyone's going through tough stuff, but these kids, I think they're just really good. We got lucky.
Oh, they got lucky.
Yeah, you hit the jackpot, lady.
Guys.
Why is this funny?
I think they might be recognizing a little bit of a honeymoon period.
No, we thought of that, but it doesn't feel like a period. Well, I mean, it's not perfect. Lita won't eat anything but potato chips.
Yeah, but we got a plan to work on that, too. I'm not saying we're perfect parents.
Are you sure?
And I think I might be recognizing a little bit of jealousy. That's not a good trait, guys.
And that the stuff they do in those groups, and the conversations that happen, and the types of people that adopt, which is all over the map, is really covered well with regards to, you know, feeling like kind of authentic but still funny and heightened. So I think the fact that it comes from this personal place for Sean Anders really makes a big difference. Like, you get to see my favorite thing of all is this short featurette. I want to say it's like 7 or 8 minutes, where it's him and his wife. That is Sean Anders and his wife talking about their kids, and you get to see their three kids that they adopted, and, you know, talking about the germination of the movie. And
well, we had been talking for a long time about whether or not we wanted to have kids, and I just made this joke of like, God, I'm starting to feel on the old side of it, and why don't we just adopt a 5-year-old, and it'll be like I got started 5 years ago. And she immediately said, you know, I would really consider that. And I said, yeah, I was really joking.
Once we decided to move forward, it was scary and overwhelming, but we were really open to whatever came our way.
We went through some really tough times, the kids adjusting to us, us adjusting to them, but not just adjusting to them, but just adjusting to being parents in general, because we went from zero kids to three kids literally overnight. I felt like so much of what we went through was funny. So I thought, yeah, couldn't we make a comedy that really shows how this really works? When I started talking about making it into a movie, I wanted it to be as much of our story as possible, but I also sat down with a bunch of other families, particularly those who had adopted teenage girls.
The support group was cracking up, actually one-upping us with things that their kids had said to teachers.
Yes. It's rare to have that honesty in a lot of things today. I'm just so proud of them.
The idea isn't for people to see the movie and then run out and adopt kids. I mean, that would be wonderful, but I feel like when people have biological kids, it's very, very easy to picture babies and Little League and graduation and prom. But when people think about kids in foster care, they're thinking ahead of all the sort of hard parts. And what the movie does is it does start with those hard parts, but it also shows what's funny about those hard parts. Then it takes you through to when you become more of a family, and hopefully it'll demystify all that, and you'll just realize that they're just a family, and that could even be you, that could even be your kids and your family.
It's really sweet. It's a really sweet movie, and I think I have a tendency to appreciate sweet films more now than ever. You know, I need it in my life. So as a parent, I can't recommend it enough, but I do think it has a broader appeal and will be the kind of movie you could watch with your parents, or, you know, you watch with your girlfriend and it, or your boyfriend, and it'd be just fine. It's a really cute, sweet movie. And, you know, is funny when it needs to be and gets dramatic and emotional, and totally, you know, got a little dusty for me. Got a little dusty, I gotta say. So anyway, I like it very much. Great little movie. And so I want to do what I normally do, which is with a new movie, I'm going to offer a pairing. But first, let me just talk briefly about the first movie that I ever saw that Sean Anders directed. Is a movie called NBT, Never Been Thawed. And now this one's only available on DVD, unfortunately. I know it's a Blu-ray show, but it's never been released on Blu-ray. And it's shot on video, as far as I can tell. Maybe Hi-8, I don't know. It looks like a video format, so I doubt it's going to get a Blu-ray, which is part of the reason I bring up on the show just the DVD, because I don't think we're going to get a better thing. But this is a really neat sort of cult comedy. It's about, well, I'll just read the back here. It says Sean, and by the way, Sean Anders plays one of the main characters in this movie. Sean has been collecting frozen dinners since he was 12. Today he works part-time as a dental hygienist to cover the cost of operating 14 full-size freezers in a one-bedroom apartment.
In my collection now, I've got over 900 pieces. So just to hold them all, I gotta run 14 full-size freezers in a one-bedroom apartment. This is a classic Frigidaire model. The first freezer I ever owned, got it for my 12th birthday, had it ever since, never let me down once. All brass fittings underneath, great unit. But these are my boys. Goose and Mav, amazing, amazing units. Now this, just a classic 68 Sears Cold Spot Spacemaster 17, just an amazing unit. Actually, this one has been hot rotted twice the Freon capacity that it was issued with back in 68, gonna keep everything cold as fuck, and that one is heavy as shit, believe me. But now this one here, 2002 Calvinator, cryogenic fucking cold. It runs at 125 watts per side at 8 ohms, tricked out aftermarket. I can run this bitch at 500 watts all day long, 450 psi on the compressor, airtight, watertight, submersible up to 350 feet. It's my best flagship, top of the line unit. This is where I keep all my deluxe gourmet entrees. This is where you're gonna find my grade A premium shit.
Sean is the founder of the Mesa Frozen Entree Enthusiast Club, a small group of fanatical collectors determined to host the world's first frozen entree enthusiast convention. Shelley became infatuated with Sean and joined the club after seeing him sing with his band. In a shameless bid for money and fame, Sean recently converted his obscene punk band to Christian rock. Al, the bass player, questions his band's new direction. He belongs to the Entree Club primarily to foster his secret crush on Shelley. Al's prospects are not helped by the fact that he lives with his parents and works as a smilist at Clown Cuts. I think it's a barbershop? I can't remember now. NBT is a hilarious, dark, and smart look at the subcultures that can turn each of us into fans, followers, and serious dorks. So, you know, very Spinal Tappy mockumentary style in its way, but, you know, very fun. I think I was surprised and interested and could certainly relate to obsessive nerds that collect things, you know, hello, my show, you know what I mean? It's definitely worth a look and very underseen as far as I'm concerned. And I just think it's interesting to watch it and then go and see this very polished, well-made studio comedy that he just put out last year and sort of see how far he's come. I think he, you know, the beginnings of his comic voice are in NBT for sure. You know, he's kind of an offbeat dude, and I like that a lot about him. So anyway, NBT is worth checking out. Never Been Thawed on DVD. But for my pairing, I thought, well, so we have this, you know, relatively dramatic film about adoption and parenting and all this stuff, and it's grounded in a lot of ways and feels real. And what would be better to watch after that than something that is more crazy, fairy tale, out there, weird adoption comedy? And of course, I'm talking about the Coen brothers' Raising Arizona.
Boys. This here's my wife.
Ma'am.
Miss Dunny.
Kinda late for visitors, isn't it, huh?
Oh, well, yeah, honey. But these boys just got out of the joint. So we gotta show a little hospitality.
Well, now, H.I. Looks like you've been up to the devil's business.
Hey, is that a him or her?
It's a little boy.
Got a name, does he?
So far, we've just been using Junior.
We call him Junior.
You mean JR, just like TV show? That's good.
Welcome home, son. Where's he been?
Phoenix.
He was visiting his grandparents.
They're separated.
Oh, would that be your folks, ma'am?
No, I'm afraid not.
Well, I thought you said your folks was dead, H.I.
Well, we thought Junior should see their final resting place. Why don't you boys have a seat?
Hi, it's 2 a.m. What's that smell?
We don't always smell this way, Ms. McDonough. I was just explaining to your better half here that when we were tunneling out, we happened to hit the main sewer line. Dumb luck, that. And we followed that
to... You mean you... Busted out of jail.
No, ma'am. We released ourselves on our own recognizance.
What Evel here is trying to say is that we felt the institution no longer had anything to offer us. My Lord, he's cute.
He's a little outlaw. You can see that high.
Now, listen. You folks can't stay here.
Ma'am?
You just can't stay. Now, I appreciate you being friends of high and all, but this is a decent family now. I mean, we got a toddler here.
Hey, who wears the pants around here, H.I.?
So, this is one of those movies that I've waffled on a little bit because I saw it on VHS back in the day and I liked it very much and it made a good impression, right? And then for some reason, I got all snooty about it. I was like, oh, that's just some redneck. I think I started to see their other movies and I was sort of backseating it a little bit and seeing it as lesser fare because it's like such a redneck comedy, and that's totally ridiculous, you know. I think maybe people might be pigeonholing it, some of them, as a, you know, dumb comedy, which it is, but it's also brilliant. Like, it's so perfect in terms of the style, the wild camera, the, you know, the stuff they're doing with Barry Sonnenfeld here is some of the greatest stylized crazy camera stuff. And I know this is a favorite of Edgar Wright, and you can definitely see some influence on the camera stuff he does in his films. I found an interview of Simon Pegg talking about it.
It means so much to me on so many different levels as a fan of the film, but creatively, it changed the way that I viewed the mechanics of film comedy when I first saw it. I kind of sat there and felt myself thinking, holy shit, this is, you don't just film funny people. Comedy isn't just about the screenplay, it's not about the actors solely. These days, a lot of comedy is just a question of you get some capable director to point the camera at funny people who improvise, and then in the edit, they cobble together some piece of shit, which is kind of funny, but if you forget the next day. I'm talking about my films. But with Raising Arizona, I started to see how the camera work and the performance style and the writing worked together in such a way that it created a kind of a much more 3D kind of comedy, whereby you were there were jokes in the way that the camera moved, and there were jokes in the way that the way that the camera moved rhymed with itself, like thematically and structurally, and the way that the script repeated a lot of what you see in what I went on to do with Edgar. It's Shaun of the Dead. You know, the You've Got Red on You. Okay, then is Raising Arizona's You've Got Red on You. The idea of, you know, sort of creating cyclical dialogue and rhyming scenes with each other. That all comes from this film, you know.
So I mean, it's a larger level cult favorite. But so I rewatched it and I was like, oh my god, this movie's fucking perfect. It's a perfect movie. It's so well put together. And the Nicolas Cage character and the Holly Hunter character are so great together. And Cage has this wonderful innocence about him, innocence and stupidity, that even though he's doing a lot of criminal things, he's a thief. He robs convenience stores and things like that, and he's a many times convicted felon. He still really has a good heart and is somebody you root for. And you know, she's a cop, so I love the idea of the cop and the, you know, criminal coming together. And then they find out about this guy, Nathan Arizona, who is, I mean, the whole movie is like a, you know, an emotional live action cartoon, and it just plays so big with all the style and, you know, the camera flying around. And then you've got a character like Nathan Arizona who runs a furniture outlet called Unpainted Arizona, and he's very, very Yosemite Sam. I mean, he even says things like, "Or my name ain't Nathan Arizona."
So come on down to Unpainted Arizona, where you can get the finest selection in fixtures and appointments for your bathroom, bedroom, boudoir. And if you can find lower prices anywhere, my name ain't Nathan Arizona.
Which feels like I said, Yosemite Sam, Foghorn Leghorn, you know, it's very Looney Tunes. Anyway, this guy and his wife have had like quintuplets or something. They have like 5 babies. And so because Nicolas Cage's character, H.I. McDonough, and his now wife, Ed, Holly Hunter, can't get anything going with the adoption agencies because of High's convictions, you know, it's just not going to work. So they're like, oh, we'll just borrow one of these kids. They've got 5. So it becomes a kidnapping comedy, and it's really wonderful. And I know that it's by no means an unknown film, but I think the further we get away from it, we do start to lose people, including myself, in terms of the Coen Brothers canon, because they're not making as many of these wild comedies anymore. And this one is so assured in the filmmaking and so funny. I mean, just little bits, parts like William Forsythe and John Goodman as two ex-con friends of Nicolas Cage's. Those guys are fantastic. Sam McMurray and Frances McDormand have a small role, and Sam McMurray is, I love him. I absolutely love him.
Need a beer, Glenn? Does the Pope wear a funny hat?
Yeah, Glenn, I guess it is kind of funny.
Say, that reminds me. How many Polacks take to screw up a light bulb?
I don't know, Glenn. One?
Nope, takes 3. Wait a minute, no, I told it wrong. Here, I'm starting again. How come it takes 3 Polacks to screw up a light bulb?
I don't know, Glenn.
Because they're so darn stupid. Shit, man. Loosen up. What's the matter? Don't you get it?
No, Glenn, I sure don't.
Well, shit, man. I guess that's why they call it a way homer.
Why's that?
Because you only get it on the way home.
I'm already home, Glenn.
You wet yourself, you wet yourself. Mr. McDonough wet himself, Daddy.
One of those great character actors. He plays a lot of dads now, and he's a really good dad. But he's just so funny and so perfectly suited for the Coen Brothers world in the way that he plays scenes. I can't even exactly explain it. But anyway, it's delightful and so well put together, and I thought was a nice compliment, because it is ultimately kind of touching. But again, so far from what I would call a grounded movie, it's a fairy tale that takes place in this crazy out there universe. But I do think it played well to watch after Instant Family. And I would go to see a double feature of this in the theater. So Raising Arizona, available on Blu-ray from Fox. I don't know if there's a special edition of it anywhere. Maybe there's an import that I'm not aware of, but this should have a special edition. This should have a Criterion or at least a Shout Factory select disc, you know, because I do think it has a strong following still. And it's fun to watch earlier Nicolas Cage performances on the heels of Mandy, for me anyway, just because I think he's great. He's one of my favorite actors. So anyway, everything I covered here, Instant Family, Never Been Thawed, and Raising Arizona, all fun times, fun watching for you folks at home. Thank you for listening. Everybody have a wonderful and Blu-ray-filled week, and I will talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.